My name is Brett Tittleman Ringo, and this is my third time up at Holden on teaching staff. And for the last time I was up here was 6 years ago. And for the last 4 years, I have been, I'm going to let you go ahead and do that. I've been living in Muscat, Oman, which if we get a map here, might make more sense. It's above Yemen and below Dubai. And my husband and I are teachers in the American International School of Muscat, and Muscat is the capital of Oman. And we teach in English to students that represent about 60 different countries or so. Omanis in the school are about, at any given time, maybe 10%. Americans in the school at any given time are only 15 to 20%. And then it has a lot of different places in between, all around the world. There happen to be a lot of Swedes, actually, up there too, because of oil. So, I'm nice to them. They swear I should be able to understand Swedish since I understand some Norwegian. I don't understand any of it. But so I was invited to talk about Oman, show where Oman is, and share their culture, and then also talk about the women of Oman. In my MFA, my focus was on female identity, feminism in art, feminism is represented in art in around America and some other cultures. And I've had a really amazing experience to get to know quite a few Omani women that are heads of what they call ministries. So we might say the Education Association, they would say the Ministry of Education. There's a Ministry of Blood. So everything that would be kind of separated into a different type of teaching they call a ministry. And there's also a very, very, very active women's association. And the woman that's the head of the women's association, the Omani Women's Association, Fatima, and I have become friends, and she's invited me to partake in some of their learnings, and so I've been able to get to know these women on a really interesting level. She's bringing a consultant. So I'm going to talk about that too, but first I'll give you some statistics about Oman, just to kind of let you know. The ethnic groups that exist there are Arab, Filipino, Somali, South Asian, Indian, Pakistan, Sri Lankan, and Bangladeshi. And when they say that they exist there, that means these people hold an Omani passport, basically. They are citizens of Oman. So we are not considered citizens of Oman. The religions in Oman are the Abadi Muslim, which I will explain in a minute, the Sunni, the Shia, Hindu, and Christian. It is one of the only Middle Eastern countries that has allowed Christians to practice, and the Sultan there actually gave them the land, and they have a Roman Catholic church, and was trying to help me with what would the word be with that until I was explaining.
Ecumenical?
Okay. And then they have a second ecumenical church in an area that is mostly Indians, and that church is all run in there by the Indian people. The languages that they speak are Arabic, English, Baluchi, Indian, and different Indian dialects. Baluchi would be kind of like our Native Americans. The Baluchis are the tribe that was the strongest and in power for a long time. Do anybody remember the actor Jim Belushi? He's a Baluchi. And they're often named after their tribes. So here we go. So here is Oman, and where we are at in Muscat is right there. You can see up on the right-hand side here. And one other interesting little fact of Oman that is this island here, Masira Island.
Thanks.
When Jimmy Carter went in to rescue, help me, from Iran, was that where the hostages were? That's where they staged the rescue from. There is a naval base on that island. And other than that, we are not very present in the military there at all. There are some, most of the military are either there to train the fighters, pilots and such, or they're connected to the embassy. So we don't have any other real military presence there. We do not train foot soldiers. The British do that. But other than that, I won't get into the whole military side of this. So you can see that Oman is a very coastal country. And right at the very tip there, where it gets the same color again right as you turn into the Persian Gulf, that is also a part of Oman. And that is, they basically, there's a couple of port cities up there, and they control all of the shipping industry that goes in and out of there. And they've been doing that since the Silk Trade route. And so that is how Oman is really makes a lot of their money. They are not oil. They are not oil-rich country. They do have some oil, but really not that much of an oil-rich country. So, and up there too is Dubai, if you've ever heard of Dubai.
On that point.
It's up, yeah. It's, you can kind of see it right below there. Right below Musandam. They call that area the Fjords of Muscat. And it's a pretty amazing area. So I wish I had my little PowerPoint clicker. This is the Sultan bin Said, Qaboos Said. He overthrew his father in 74. So up until 74, there were 15 miles of paved road. And the only place that there was electricity was the Sultan's palace. And I'll show you the main area where there was electricity. So everything that has been built since then has been built by Sultan Qaboos. They call him a benevolent sultan. They love him. They just absolutely love him. And he has done amazing things for the country, education being one of them. You can kind of tell this is his main palace. Looks like it was built in the 70s, right? and this is the main port, which you can see how built up it is. This picture was taken maybe about a year ago. And this would have been the only area that had electricity back before when he overthrew his father. It was a peaceful overthrow. There's lots of rumors. It's a very beautiful picture. That's kind of what it looks like during the day. So most of the buildings are slow and flat like this, and they exist along the coastline. But this has been restored quite a bit. This is also a coastal town that you would see in Muscat. Again, the architecture, but not as built up. They all have cars now. Fishing industry is huge. In Muscat, that's how they survive. And if you're their main export, if you were driving out away from the sea, then you would see these kind of villages that the Sultan has been building for the people that live in these mountains. And there are villages in the tops of these mountains, believe it or not.
Where did they have lived before he built this in the
mountains, and they would have been here also. Uh-huh. They just would have had different structures. They wouldn't have been new. I think I have one coming up that's like that. There are a lot of Bedouins, and I'll show you some images of Bedouins.
Are they all walled like that? And if they're walled, why are they walled?
They're walled if they are if they're a home, and or if they're going to be out in the courtyards. Many of the mosques are walled, and it's more about privacy than anything else. And please ask me questions. I love that, but just interrupt me and ask questions at any time. Part of the reason for the walls are also because of livestock originally, that it would have been as much about that as anything else to keep their livestock in. Their livestock would have lived in their courtyard, in their house. Mostly camels and goats. So this is just to show you kind of the construction, and they're building a mosque, but it's all concrete. And they're a big exporter of concrete also, but they're running out, believe it, without all that rock. And this just keeps spreading. And you can see that some of the newer ones, they just kind of run into each other, and there might be a wall along the street, but it wouldn't necessarily be just around the house itself. So, went back one too much. So I'm just going to show you just a few different places of landscape. It's very extreme. You go from the sea to these mountains. And they also have been doing a lot of vacation, or doing a lot of building of their tourism trade. Caving is huge there. People come from around the world to cave. And then on the other end, we get to this. And I wanted to show this because I think people do not think of this when you think of the Arab countries. And you can see the sprawl. It is a continual sprawl. Some people say it's about the size of Kansas. Some people say it's more about the size of Montana. There's about 2.4 million people, and about a million of those people live in the Muscat central area. They're coming into the city, mostly because of jobs and because of development. And just to give you an idea, this is another place they would have lived, to answer your question. This is how they farm.
Is that also in the Muscat area?
This would be, I could get to a place like this from Muscat in about a half hour drive. So they are all over. There are a lot of oases. And they do this tiered farming system. There are also a lot of wadis. There's a lot of water that comes down off of those mountains when it rains. And it does rain quite a bit up there because it's so close to the ocean. And there's nothing really on those mountains to stop the rain, so it fills in these places that they call a wadi. And then there is the desert. This is Wahiba Sands. It is a very interesting desert in that it runs from Saudi straight to the sea, and it just drops off into the sea. And there are a lot of people that live out in the desert. And this one's a little out of sync, but it's a good one to see. Their doors, the Arabic.
Is this into a house?
This is into a business. This is, it's a ministry of some kind of ministry of business. I can read some Arabic a little bit. I don't really speak much. They start learning English in the first grade, and they also start computers in the first grade. And they are all educated now up until high school. It's required by law. And if you live in those mountains, a four-wheel drive will go pick you up every day, and it's all paid for by the government. Their medical is also paid for by the government. And they got them a little in the sink somehow when they got up. Some of the older villages this would be, this is maybe 6 hours or so. So the farther you get away from Muscat, the more you see the original culture. You can see the mother here. She has turned her back when she saw my husband, actually. She, when I was there, she wasn't covered. So it is not a country where women have to cover. They're not required to cover. And it's a choice. And it's also a choice of culture. It has nothing to do with religion in any of the Muslim countries. There are two places in the Quran that say something about women that need to be covered. One is a place where it specifically says women should cover their breasts. And then there's another one that uses the word where it says women should cover for their, unless they are in the presence of their husbands, and it goes down the lineage of maybe any male person that would be related to them somehow. But the word that they use, the kabad, is actually a cover for anything. There's also places where they use that word in the Quran where it refers to covering the table with the same word, or and it refers to covering their an animal with the same word. So there is no word that is in the Quran that is a burqa or hijab, although that the word hijab does come from that original word in the Quran. And the Omani women are really trying, they're educated by the government, they are in the ministry of with the church, there are scholars of the Quran, female scholars of the Quran in Oman, that are also teachers. These are some of the Omani kids. You can see a lot of the girls run around without cover. And the boys, one thing that I find interesting that people don't necessarily always point out is that the men in these cultures are as covered as the women. We cover like this a lot when we're out in the heat. These are some of the Omani boys. But I also wanted, I wasn't 100% prepared for this. I don't have all my photos with me. But about 75% of the culture still is in the traditional dress. But about 25% of the culture is in contemporary dress. So he's Omani also. It tends to be the younger that are in the more Western style dress. But when they're in school, I love these guys, they're all still in their Omani style dress. And the girls cover, it's part of their uniform. And so you will see them. In the city, you don't see the girls covered as much with their head wrap. But
at your school, do they all cover no matter what they are?
Our uniform in our school is a red, white, or blue polo shirt. And believe me, there are many interpretations of how to wear this red, white, and blue polo shirt. The Muslim girls will often wear a long sleeve shirt underneath, and if they wear skirts, they'll often wear leggings. Sometimes they'll wear the head scarf. Sometimes they won't. It just has to do with their personal preference. So I wanted to just show you the culture in and of itself. The hat that he's wearing is called a kuma, and that is very specific to Oman. And the scarf, they'll often have that. Sometimes they use it on their head. But I thought it was important to show the men as well as the women so that you can see. It's a Bedouin boy. A lot of the Bedouins are there for us nowadays. He would take us for camel rides, the students, the kids. But they would be covered like this in the desert. The men's dress, by the way, is called the dishdasha. Some people will say dishdash, but it is dishdasha. The kids are so cute. I'm telling you, the eyes are just amazing. And the little girls love to wear their traditional dress. Their traditional dress is very, very, very colorful. And you get to, you know, put all this jewelry on, right? You get, and so she's dressed for some kind of ceremony. And then if you're out in the villages, you'll see them just kind of running around like that. And they're the friendliest culture that I have ever met in any of my travels. It's just very amazing. Whenever I read anything too about Omanis, people will always say that they're very, very, very friendly. And
how long have you been there?
I've been there for 4 years, my husband and I, and we're going back. We've signed for 2 more years.
Oh.
Hopefully we'll, you know, I don't know, we might go somewhere after that, but we just absolutely love it. She's just adorable. I know. Took me about 45 pictures to get this picture. This is her mom. Her mom is a Bedouin. The Bedouin women do wear the mask when they're out. I kind of do this sometimes. She has a degree from Oxford in English literature. So she has gone back to her Bedouin culture. She said she was 42, if I remember correctly. And this little area, you can see the weavings on the wall and such. It's set up very close to a tourist camp. And so they dress like this and come and sell their wares. And she's helping set up a community just outside of the desert that these women are now starting to export. And she's helping mostly to educate the women that are even older, because if you were not part of, you know, if you were younger than 30, and you really didn't have as much education. There were only 3 schools in all of Oman before this sultan came. Now I think there's over 2,000 or something. But if you were just going around in Oman, and you would often see girls like this. That's my oldest daughter there. And the girls, you can see the younger ones are not covered. The two women on the right both studied in the U.S. We have a very large exchange program with a lot of different universities here. And it's just amazing, you know, how much they speak English. And you can see here what I was talking about them covering with just something long underneath and wearing whatever they want over the top. And then I wanted to show you this, just so you can see the difference in how the Omanis look. They are, there's no one necessarily very strong look of an Omani. Their skin tones are very different. Oman used to own, or how do you say, Zanzibar used to be part of Oman. So when you see people that are darker and look more like, might be African in some ways, for they're probably from Zanzibar originally. She's from Somalia originally. She's of Somalia lineage. And then the other girl on the left. And you can see the different ways that they cover. It's very loose. Their hair shows. And then we start to get to some of the more, the women that have been educated through now this, the educational system that the Sultan has put in place, and they're starting to graduate. they're starting to go into the work world. They compete worldwide. She's a stewardess on Oman Air, one of the best airlines you'll ever fly, because it's really brand new. If they know they're going to go into a business like this, and they do have universities in Oman, that they are also broken down the way I was saying the ministries are. So you would go to a university for business, you would go to a university for language, you would go to a university for technology. If they're in the, she probably speaks about fluently 5 different languages. Semi-fluent, 10. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. We don't do this. This woman is a CEO for one of the head export design companies of furniture in Oman. She created it herself. Entrepreneurship is something very, very, very strong in Oman because they don't have the oil. So they're starting to get more and more entrepreneurial. Having the tourism come in is one of them. And Moza is her name. And Moza has built the company up, and I think she has about 3,000 people working for her. And out of those 3,000, more than 3/4 of them are women.
If they don't have oil to give them income, where does the money come from that supports all the government programs?
That supports that. They have natural gas. They control that shipping and that infrastructure of the shipping. So every oil rig that comes through there has to go through one of our ports. So that has been one of the main stays since even before there was electricity. They do have some oil. It's just not a huge amount that you would see in Saudi or even UAE or Bahrain, where they get a check all the time. So probably, you know, there is quite a bit of that money from that's been funneled into building, but the Sultan gets it from other countries. Oman is very, very friendly with everyone else. There's no conflict. There's no war. There's no. He's just been stayed very, 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 very neutral, even with Yemen right down there and Saudi on the side. And because that has happened, they also have gotten loans from other countries to come in and help do this. It's to everybody else's benefit around them to do this. So Saudi has helped build some. And in this process, he's included women. And they just celebrated their 40th anniversary, and this says on it, it says, letter, probably like happy 40 or something like that. This is henna, but they do the lot of henna. I love this picture. I don't know her personally. She's one of the heads of ministry of infrastructure of traffic and building the roads and such. So yeah. Question? No? This was during the 40th celebration where she was talking about how we're going to grow even more. The reality of it is that it's kind of, in some ways, almost too much growth. Yeah, too fast to build that much in that amount of time. There are just some things that they don't do. They don't recycle anything. Absolutely nothing. They have just a really high rate of consumption right now.
So there's more and more malls going in, there are more and more big, big corporations coming in that are kind of sucking up the culture, and the Sultan has realized that. But there are also more and more opportunities. And this is an Omani woman. She's on the top of Kilimanjaro. You can't see it in here very well. There's an Omani team in there, and our Omani team has a woman on it. This is a qualifying race for the French. What is it? Yeah. This is, yeah, the Tour de France. This is the Oman qualifying race. I mean, so this, you just don't think of these kind of things. We have three different race teams. One of them is Formula One. Second most watched sport, except for soccer, which is football, in our area. And she is a very up-and-coming photographer, and in Oman, she's Omani. She now travels all around. This is one of the Omani, the Oman Tribune, and she does a lot of sports photography. But she also does some amazing other work, and she's starting to go back and represent the women in the culture in a more contemporary way. This is one of her photographs.
Is there prejudice?
Go ahead. Two questions.
I was going to say, is there prejudice, or are there classes of people, or since you have these different origins of people,
yeah.
Are there certain groups that are?
There are. There are different classes. Certainly, this group of kids right now would be in a lower class. You'll see the women that still dress in the very colorful hijabs versus the black hijabs. That's actually a class status in Oman. So the black is a choice. It's a fashion statement, and it's also a statement of an upper class person. The men's dishdasha, the all-white ones, although they're not quite as obvious because of the colorings, the more wealthy Omanis, their dishdashas will be made out of silk and more expensive fabrics, and then the more common dishdashas is just going to be cotton and maybe polyester. That's within the Omanis themselves. Then the Indian, and if you go to the other that I was saying, the Somalis, the Zanzibaris, the Belushis are considered very low on the list, actually, as far as status goes. There's quite a prejudice against the Belushis.
Is your skin color darker, too, as you go lower?
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Sometimes it really has to do more with region than it does. I think it's what I've kind of experienced. The closer you get to the desert, the darker they tend to get in skin tone. And I think that has to do with heritage more than, you know, you're in the desert, therefore you're darker. But you can tell now. I couldn't tell before. I can now tell if they're from the mountains because of their facial features and skin color, or if they're closer to the desert, or if they're from the flats. It's an interesting, you know, kind of delineation. There's an amazing group from the mountains that they all have. I thought I had a picture of one of the gals, but I don't. Are these? You can tell their eyes are a little light. Her eyes are a little lighter. But there's a group that their eyes are blue.
Blue.
Crystal blue. It's gorgeous. And you can see they're lighter than that last group I showed you. They are from a village in the ocean side. So.
You indicated that the women are making considerable strides. But then there's some fear that might not be able to be continued when they get married. Does that imply then that the men are more traditional minded and not growing in this process of modernization?
I would say I was implying that.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, it's from me. I would say that women like Moza and Sumaya and those that are of the Women's Association, I think they would say, and again, I'm speaking for them in a way that I probably shouldn't be, but I would say that they kind of consider that also. But the men are, I mean, there are men that are also very okay with it all,
uh-huh.
and open with it, and yeah.
Is it because of the schooling or something that they're not?
Mm-hmm. I think it is more because of the culture,
oh.
and that I would say that it's more of a cultural thing, that it's hard to change. It's a slow changing process when you're raised in a certain culture that does something one way and then moves on to another way and embraces that in Oman it's very very obvious delineation because there are those that are before Sultan Qaboos and those that are after. And if you were younger and your parents were younger when you started in that tradition, then it tends to be more and more accepted as they go along. But if your parents were older and you were older and you started in that tradition, maybe in the middle of it, then I think that gets harder for them to accept. So, and there is certainly a connection between Islam and having children and male children. I think that's still, and that is part of their culture also. That's how I would answer that question. I am not Omani, so I just want to say, you know, that in some ways I feel a little bit, you know, speaking for them. She's educating the men as well as the women, obviously, while she's doing that. So that's an interesting concept.
I think it's interesting to compare it to other Middle East countries.
Yes,
this seems very tolerant.
Right. Oman is extremely tolerant from I think anything that we are ever really used to seeing in our media. And we will talk. I'll go into more of that and how these women are reaching out to other other women around them and how they get responses back. It is amazing to me how they've been able to stay so neutral. I don't, as an American that even sees what just happened recently within our own government, you know, how do they manage to live in the middle of all of this unrest and stay so incredibly, incredibly neutral that they can have this kind of an existence? And that the women can too. And I don't have an answer to that question. That's a question in my mind.
Just a different kind of topic.
Yes.
Just where do people get their food, especially in the city? Like, is it supermarket shopping, or is it from Oman, or is it shipped in from all over?
All of the above. They do grow quite a few of their own fruits and vegetables. They obviously supply a lot of their own fish. They supply a lot of their own meat, mostly lamb and goat. So if you don't want to eat lamb and goat, they do some of them do eat camel still, but that's very, very rare and was very rare in the first place. So I would say about 50% of the vegetables that I buy are grown in Oman. Then they start coming from everywhere else. A lot of them are from Africa. A lot of the meat is from Pakistan and India. Actually, the beef is from India. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is. I guess it's something that they've started. So there's that. Then there are these things called hypermarkets. They're just an experience all their own, I'm telling you. This is Walmart Superstore on steroids. And they're just crazy. And you can buy a lot. You can even buy our food there. If you want to pay $4 for a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese, it's there. If you want to pay $6 to $8 for a box of Pop-Tarts, they're there. We also have multiple Starbucks, and Caribou Coffee just opened before we left.
Do women who are modernizing want to be more Western American in their habits, like shopping? I mean,
yes.
Talk about shopping, but also like coffee drinking and all that.
Yeah, that's a good question. Do they want to be more Americanized in their habits? And the answer is definitely yes. And the younger they get, the more Americanized they want to be. And that, for me, is sad to see. You know, obviously because I'm American, and also because I think that the old culture is just absolutely gorgeous. And those kind of Westernized things are coming in and taking over the old, which is kind of sad. So you'll see women with the hijabs, the black ones, that have had them. These are the very wealthy women have had Dolce & Gabbana do this bedding and stuff on them.
Have what? I'm sorry, I didn't.
They'll have them custom made almost always, and they'll have they have them embellished. They've kind of have some, but see how they're embellished here? They'll send them to custom design houses and stuff and have them embellished there. And there was one woman that had a Dolce & Gabbana one, and she was just... And so they do want to be very, very, very Westernized. And when you go to the mall, there's Forever 21 is there, Gap, Tommy Hilfiger, Borders. It's the only bookstore. Oh, that's right. I didn't think about that. Ooh, that could be bad. I may not have a bookstore anymore. And how are we doing for time? I would think so. My next one, I'm going to talk more about that and how they're trying to work with that. And this core of women that you're seeing here are basically the whole powerhouse behind a lot of this. Mm-hmm. And they do have one man, he's their banker, that's in that and working with exactly that question. So that's a good place to end, and how we have taken into that.
What is your next class?
My next class is at 10? 10:50 on Thursday. I knew the day. Okay?
Thank you.